utility belt to get me a cruise on the SS Gotham?
A cruise? Mere petty pilfering. I'll get you the whole ship.
What? The whole ship?
How, Joker?
First steps first.
Our old nemesis, Batman.
He'll try to stop us.
Exactly, exactly. We must first eliminate Batman from the scene.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
Well, you look nervous. Is it the scars? You want to know how I got them? Come here. Hey. Look at me. So I had a wife. She was beautiful. Like you. Who tells me I worry too much? Who tells me I ought to smile more? Who gambles and gets in deep with the sharks? Hey. One day they carve her face. We have no money for surgeries. She can't take it. I just want to see her smile again. I just want her to know that I don't care about the scars. So, I stick a razor in my mouth and do this to myself. And you know what? She can't stand the sight of me. She leaves. Now I see the funny side. Now I'm always smiling.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the History Through Film podcast. I am your host, Curtis Allen, and today we've got a really cool special episode. We're here live. Well, not when you're listening to it, but when we're recording, we got our 7th hour History Through Film 2 class, and this is our Joker. Yeah, let's hear it, everyone. Woo, yeah.
It's like Major League. Hey,
that's probably the most noise they've made all semester, but that's okay.
Listen anyway.
hell yeah. I got a guy on the other line about some tires, white walls. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that was a little Major League spin-off for you.
Action. But today's topic is the Jokers. We are talking about different incarnations of the Joker. We're going into the film series minus Jared Leto, right? Does anybody want to talk about Jared Leto from Suicide Squad?
He was in Suicide Squad.
Yep. Yes.
That's about
okay, we covered that. Right? Yeah. I would say he's not quite iconic yet. I don't think he was bad, but I would rather go back in time.
I don't think he had enough screen time. Yeah. Method acting, too.
That's true.
So we'll talk another time if we have time at the end, maybe.
And we're also not really going to talk about Mark Hamill's version, which is the animated Batman version. And that's great, though. He's been doing that for like 20 years.
Right.
So no disrespect to Luke Skywalker and some of our heroes in this room. But we're going to focus on Cesar Romero's 1966 version from Batman, the television show, 1989's Jack Nicholson in the iconic Tim Burton's Batman, which kind of shift the change for, I don't know, maybe the superhero genre. Mm-hmm. You can go all the way back then. And then we're going to talk about Heath Ledger's, and we're not certainly going to be the first one to ever talk about his portrayal because Grammy and Oscar.
Oh, Oscar.
Yeah, I don't think he sang. Did he put out an album?
I didn't know the soundtrack was that good.
Why so serious? Okay. We're going to cut that part out of here. We're going to edit that, and no, we're not.
None of you heard that.
So we are certainly not experts in the Joker mythology, I would say. I mean, I grew up on the television Joker from 66, although I'm not that old. I wasn't born yet, but in reruns and reruns and reruns. And then I will tell you that I was most of your guys' age when I went to the 89 Batman, because I was like a senior in high school. So that always stuck with me. But the Joker developed and first published in 1940 in Batman Comics. And he was kind of the clown prince that we know from, just from the different incarnations of him, okay, the makeup and everything. There was nothing really different about that. But what you get are the different personalities, the different renditions, the different, what do you want to say, like mindset of the Joker through time. And so some have been campy, like mine,
right.
Cesar Romero, and some have been a little bit more on target with the comic book.
Yeah, which like is Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. And then you've got what I like to call what the post 9/11 era Joker, which is like serious. Like,
yeah, you, this terrorist and kill like you with a pencil. Psychopath.
Generationally, though, too, because obviously, you know, you start off on television. Only certain things can be said, done on television.
FCC-wise.
Those were all marketed towards, you know, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, that original Batman.
Fanboys, yeah.
Now, you see, with all these superhero movies coming out, they're trying to hit the 20-somethings, 30-somethings, those that grew up with the Jack Nicholson's of the world. If you see it, it's getting deeper and deeper, and there's more on television, so
yeah.
It's acceptable now.
Well, in the little bit of research that I did today, I found out that during the 1950s and 60s, the Joker was around in the comics, but he was kind of not very popular. I guess the popularity of the Joker was waning just a little bit. The series, the TV series, brought it back. And now the series itself, you got to talk about Batman 1966. It kind of reflects that time period. How? Bam, zoom. It
Adam
worked,
West.
Though. It worked as a comedy. I guess it reflects the zaniness of the 60s. Not that the 60s were all zany, but what I'm saying is that the Batman was not the Batman that we knew today.
Right. The more slapstick humor, right. You know, you think of like some of the black and white Charlie Chaplin humors and that came before that. And that's kind of what you're getting at.
Yeah. Right. And what I'm also trying, what I'm trying to get to is that the Batmans in the comics kind of, or the Batman television show kind of fit the comics. And the Cesar Romero character was just to be the comic book version of the Joker, which he was in the comics. He wasn't the homicidal maniac that doesn't come until really a reboot of him in the 70s.
Right.
And then in the 80s with The Killing Joke, 1988, and then The Dark Knight Returns, which is the comic book that really kind of rewrote the legacy of Batman. And forever then it'd become like The Dark Knight, not just Batman, but The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. So it was much more serious and much more violent, okay? I mean, in The Killing Joke, I talked about this with you, Nick. Basically what he does is he takes Commissioner Gordon hostage, sticks him in a warehouse, he shoots his Barbara, his daughter, in the stomach, paralyzes her, and he pretty much, he pretty much tortures Commissioner Gordon by having him watch his daughter bleed to death and all this and that and gets him on LSD. It was just a lot darker.
Yeah, that's Gordon, pretty dark.
Yeah, that's pretty dark. But Cesar Romero, I mean, there's not a lot I was going to say about the Cesar Romero character other than it was the jokester Joker with the hand buzzers and, you know, just not to be taken too serious. The whole series is not to be taken too seriously. Mm-hmm. A grown man living with a teenager, that's kind of weird.
That's not normal, yeah?
Is that the 60s, I guess?
Ooh, yikes. So, right.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. Millionaire lives with teenager. But... Michael Jackson. Yeah. Hey-o.
Wow.
Too soon?
All right.
Too soon? Okay.
What are you doing?
So anyways, the only other interesting thing about Cesar Romero is that he did bring kind of the popularity of the Joker back. And at the time, I'll just add, the Joker character had a little bit of a revitalized career in the comics. But as the Batman series also declined in popularity, the Joker did in the comic series as well. And like I just stated a little bit before, he got more of a reboot in the 1970s, and that's when we see the homicidal type Joker. That kind of leads us into...
Iconic, yeah.
Yeah, that leads us into the 80s, and I would say that Tim Burton's comic book version of Batman, which has done pretty well.
Absolutely.
I mean, it ages pretty well. If you look at it today, it's more comic bookish, but in a dark way.
Right.
But you know, you get the more kind of...
You get that feel.
Serious Joker.
For sure. If you guys know anything about Tim Burton, you know, the other films he's made, you know, Edward Scissorhands and Nightmare Before Christmas or whatever the name of that is. They're just really kind of out there movies that are darker in tone. And that's what you have with 1989's Batman. And the Joker specifically, it was the first cinematic adaptation of Joker, because as you mentioned, Cesar Romero was not on a movie yet. So that was something coming to the big screen. But Tim Burton gave Jack Nicholson the free range character to just run with it. You know, he said, and that's his personality. And what you know as Jack Nicholson had been kind of big by that moment. Curtis, you would probably know how big he was into his career, but Nicholson was, he was a pretty well-known star at that point, right?
And he made the most money off of any film from Batman.
Yeah.
That's to lure him in. They
gave him that free reign. They said, hey, you can make him how you want. So his,
they gave him a bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go in and just write.
Yeah, I just said, here's your whatever you want out of it. But it took a lot of his character from The Shining, you know, that sarcastic, dark humor, and he ran with that in this film. And that's what just kind of gravitated to him. And even though it's Batman is the name of the movie, it actually, I found myself wanting to see Joker, and those are the more memorable scenes than Michael Keaton's Batman character.
Right.
So that was my takeaway right off the bat of just, hey, like I said, he provided some dark comedy and some dark moments, but also just some of that slapstick stuff too, and some of those lines that you quote, and you like, you don't even know you're quoting, like you know the quote, but you don't know it's from Batman.
Or
like
the new needs an enema.
Absolutely, that's your personal favorite.
I had to look up what enema was when I was a senior.
Yep, exactly. There you go. Or like,
I didn't want one.
Never rubber man. I teach anatomy, so we'll go on that different topic. Never rub another man's rhubarb. Yes. It's like, what the hell does that mean?
You ever dance with the devil?
Yes, exactly. So some of those quotes are just iconic. That's what I remember from that. So.
And the Prince album, the Prince soundtrack, which, by the way, that was a personal like suggestion from Jack Nicholson. He was friends with Prince.
Yeah.
And so the only reason I mention that is because some of the songs are a little outrageous. They're used in the film, but that's where a lot of those Joker lines stick with you, because you hear them on the music if you ever listen to the soundtrack.
Which is interesting about that whole series of movies. There are some really big songs and soundtracks that come out of those three movies, with Seal and with Prince. I mean, they're memorable songs.
Major motion pictures that you know, really hit that.
The big songs.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the storyline is not, you know, that's more Tim Burton, but the storyline takes Joker into how he first got started, which I guess you don't really know that much about if you're not too much a comic book fan, but he used to be a crime lord, and he had a boss, and the boss basically assassinated. Again, we always talk spoiler alert, you know, but I'm assuming if you haven't seen it now, you're not going to see it. So his basically boss has him assassinated by a corrupt cop, and he actually, Batman jumps in and tries to save him, but in the process, and Commissioner Gordon, Joker, which at the time is his character, Jack Napier, right, gets knocked into a chemical acid bath, basically. And he somehow survives that, gets washed ashore, transforms into this pale white, you know, skin with the green hair and the red lips and all that, and then goes and assassinates Garth Grissom, right? And basically,
that's not much different than the comic book incarnations that we've seen.
Correct.
Especially the Killing Joke. That's how it kind of happens.
That's how it comes about. But how he gets there, and it talks about this later in the movie, it basically rewinds to when he's a young Jack Napier, kind of making a name for himself. He assassinates Bruce Wayne's parents. So that's a different spin, not have seen, especially if you saw The Dark Knight first, and then you go back, like, I don't remember that. So that was a Tim Burton ad, and the writers actually didn't want that. But then the writers went on strike, and guess where? They weren't around. So Tim Burton's like, all right, I'm putting that back in. So that was just a little wrinkle. After I went back and watched this, I was like, oh, that's kind of how he creates who he is and the tie-in to Batman. And he says one of the most iconic lines of right before he shoots Bruce Wayne's parents and robs him. He says, you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, kid? And then he says that later in the film, and that makes that connection. Absolutely. And then I just remember at the end, too, where they go back and forth, and right before he's about to die, he knows it. He yells at the gargoyle, like, what are you looking at? And the gargoyle is obviously a statue, so he's not saying anything. And then Batman's got him, and Jack Nicholson puts on glasses and goes, you wouldn't hit a man with glasses, right? And just kind of cackles and laughs. So that's that kind of slapstick
humor.
That's
kind of the Cesar Romero type.
Exactly.
Joker.
They stay true to that, which is fun, but then they also brought in the dark. So it's kind of a cool transition once you see all three of them into what your character's going to be, Nick.
He is.
Before we get into Heath Ledger's, some of the students kind of chose sides. Not really sides, because the idea isn't that we're really comparing the Jokers, because we can all agree that Heath Ledger's is incredible, but there's also parts of, you know, Jack Nicholson's that's incredible, and Cesar Romero, which is goofy but fits the whole, you know, time period that the 60s with that series. By the way, you know, Bill Murray was supposed to play Batman.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
89's Batman.
Really?
Yeah, they were trying to go, they were trying to decide, or were they going the campy route, or were they going to go the serious route? And so they the Bill Murray version kind of fell to the side, and then when they cast Michael Keaton, who's basically known as a comedic actor, a lot of people thought, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
And so that's just another little side note. But I was mentioning some of the students that sign up, they kind of, you know, signed up whether they wanted the 66, the 89, or the 2008 Joker. We got Michael Herman here that signed. He was like the lone guy that signed up for me.
An old soul.
He's an old soul, the Herminator. Michael, the Herminator. Why did you choose Cesar Romero?
So I chose Cesar Romero because he's different than the other two. Unlike the 2008 Joker, who's more serious, more violent, Cesar Romero has that comedic, you know, effect that we've kind of missed out on. Because like we said earlier, it's kind of like a post 9/11 Joker who's more into killing, more into torturing, and sometimes the best thing you need is just a little humor and just kind of look back at how the world usually was.
Yeah. Well, then that's actually a good point, I think, because the one thing that the Joker always did for Batman was, well, in the comics at least, he was the opposite of Batman, who was serious, who was somewhat depressed, you know, mourning the death of his parents. And then the Joker, which is, you know, the yin of his yang, the opposite, was sadistic, but kind of in a fun way, at least in the comics and definitely in the television series. I wish they do a serious version of the Riddler, by the way, because that's my favorite character.
Absolutely.
But I think Gotham, they probably do that.
He's way darker in Gotham.
Yeah,
TV series is definitely darker than what it was.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there as far as the Riddler, because we're talking about the Joker. But, I mean, the fact that Cesar Romero, the actor, wouldn't even shave his mustache.
Yeah.
You know, he was like an established, like, Hispanic actor, and the idea was, you know, the other roles that he took in television and film, he didn't want to get rid of that iconic mustache because, as an actor, that was part of his.
Was that
trait.
Paul Young or was that?
Yeah, Paul Young will not shave the mustache.
Tom Selleck?
We could, yeah. And Tom Selleck, yeah. But the fact that, you know, he wouldn't even shave the mustache kind of adds to the
comedy the zaniness, yeah.
The zaniness also. Mm-hmm. But what about the 89 Joker? We've got Nick Barnett behind you.
Repeat podcaster, by the way, right?
We have a repeat podcaster, Nick Barnett. He seems to be in a conversation with his sister right now. He gives her a hard time in this class. Sorry, I feel so bad for him.
Our mom's mad at her.
Who's mad?
Our mom is mad at her.
We're going to go live to the Barnett house where we have mom on the phone. Okay, so Nick, why the 89 Joker? I mean,
Well, I think that it's the one that's most true to the comics, and I didn't want to be on Mr. Madeline's team.
Well played.
That's a great point. That may just have won the argument right there.
That was the main reason.
Dakota.
Yeah.
Surprise. Surprise, he's here. Well, Dakota's name was on the board, too. And any reason that you had chosen the Joker, Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, I chose Jack Nicholson's Joker particularly because he has a different type of power than the 2008 Joker. And, I mean, the 1966 Jokers doesn't really have much power or influence, whereas this Joker, he becomes a mobster. He pushes his position forward, and he takes control of the situation as well as those around him to further his position, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, that's a great point. He
wow.
I think we're out of work,
this
Nick.
Short, yeah, because we've just been outdone by our student.
A daily occurrence.
Yes. Stop it. Okay. No, that's a great point though, because what. You see that in the mob mentality. The whole film almost feels like a mob movie and purposely done because the boss Grissom, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, Jack Napier works for. But I was also kind of along those lines I was mentioning to you, Will, earlier when we were talking about how do these Jokers really reflect society. And I said, well, what's interesting about this particular Joker is that he poisons the
makeup,
the toiletries, the makeup, cosmetics, the everyday products with Smilex, things that we use. And perhaps there's something to be said about the vanity aspect of the film, that we're all of a sudden our everyday products we use to just go out and do our job or survive are tainted now. I don't know if it has something to do with the MTV era.
Sure.
I mean, it's the 80s. I don't know. I mean,
a lot of crazy things.
It's not to say that the 80s is more more vain than like the 90s or the 2000s, but I just found that to be kind of
definitely a class struggle. Like, with the lower class, and you see it in the 2008 adaptation as well. There's the movies, they just bring about, you know, like you said, the vanity, the rich versus this underworld, the poor. You see it in Batman Begins, when he's dropped down, when he's walking around the streets. And, I mean, yeah, definitely see class struggle within both those. I never thought about that. It's really good.
I didn't either until now.
I'll take credit for it then.
I read that. What were you saying?
Don't worry. Okay. About. Nick, Dakota, what else to add?
Dakota, did you want to up this a little bit on the intelligence aspect?
Go ahead, Dakota.
Well, if we're going to get a little bit off the Joker and just talk about the Batman series in general, the television and cinematic series, one thing that I do like about the 1966 is that Batman cemented DC's place in the television industry. Because after that came Wonder Woman, and then like there was a bit of a break.
Superman.
Yeah. Superman, but
Superman had been around, yeah.
Right.
You don't really see any Marvel television series until, if ever.
Well, they did have like the Hulk.
Oh yeah,
that was terrible.
Yeah, you know, and they had a Spider-Man one that was short lived, but they weren't up to par with even Wonder Woman was pretty popular. Batman everyone, especially with Adam West, kind of his career being revitalized with the Family Guy and other things, you know, rest in peace because he died. But they've always been popular. I mean, it's always going to be an iconic part of television history. It only ran for two seasons too. And when you look back with all the guest stars and things like that, it was popular to be on that show as well, because the variety show was very popular at that time as well. Dean Martin's variety show, where you'd have, you know, special guests on. I was watching an episode the other day, and Batman and Robin would always have, they'd always be climbing the side of the building. Somebody would pop out of the window. It was Jerry Lewis, of all people.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I said. Goodness gracious. Not Great Balls of Fire. Not Jerry Lee Lewis. But Jerry Lewis. So... but what about Heath Ledger? I mean, what can we say about him?
Everybody that's kind of been talking, everyone has been kind of, they've been comparing both of them to Heath Ledger, right? Because it is the most notable, especially with your generation. You know, the thing that sticks out is, wow, is it, am I too
long? Yeah, check? Wow. Swallow it.
Just kind of move the mic closer.
If we could have you move the mic closer.
Finally, awkward. Super Bowl.
What are you doing?
You get a worthy Edison. Which you just don't get. I mean, you look at any of the Marvel movies. You just don't have worthy adversaries. It's so hard to get him to that point. He was the worthy adversary. It makes it incredible. The preparation that he went into for making the movie itself. You're talking 6 weeks. He locked himself in a hotel room for 6 weeks and did nothing but practice voices, write in a journal, and
come up with his makeup, his costume, and all that.
And that's kind of a misnomer. He didn't design the makeup himself.
Okay.
They just kept making changes to it. Now, he did do some weird things when they were putting it on. They said he did elongated faces to really make it smeary, to make it disheartening. But his was makeup. It was meant to be makeup. I mean, and he would wear it for long periods of time. He liked when it would run, when the sweat marks would come about. I mean, it was just everything that went into his portrayal of it just makes it so realistic. Like we'd mentioned before, he was a method actor. He did get into the role, and it's another kind of misconception that he was in this role all the time when he was on set. No, they said he literally only went full Joker when the cameras were running. And there's a lot of, I don't know, speculation that he did this on purpose. Because what you get is just incredible reactions from his co-actors in this. They didn't know until he went full out Joker on him what he was going to do, how he was going to act, and that shock was real, and it made it more realistic. Maggie Gyllenhaal in the scene where she's in the ballroom. That was the first time she had ever seen him in full makeup. They shot it early on. She had never seen him before, so she keeps looking away, and he's like grabbing her face and making her look at him. That was all done on spot. That was all. That was her real reaction to it, which just made the character so just scary. I mean, he was a scary character. He was this maniac, and I think that adds to all of it. You know, he's just a badass.
He's got that hunched over posture too. I was just thinking of.
I've said worse on here.
Yeah.
yeah, he does. I mean, every part of him was that was the character, and that's incredible. We were talking earlier on about kind of what Nolan did with him, and Nolan just basically said, you know, we want Clockwork Orange to be a part of this. We want, you know, he gave it to him and said, make it like this, and he pulled it off. It was incredible what he did with the part, and that's why I say it. I think all of them are measured against it, because I think all movie villains are going to be measured against him in that movie. It's incredible.
So speaking of Clockwork Orange, that is the perfect, what I want to say, influence, I think, for that character. Because, by the way, if you've never seen Clockwork Orange, watch it, and you will probably, at this time, you'll think that Malcolm McDowell is playing a Joker-type character.
Yeah.
What's interesting about the Joker 2008 Heath Ledger is we always, nowadays, especially with Marvel films, we like to rate and compare our villains. And what makes a good villain is a villain that's got a history, a background, a motivation, some reason for him to do the way that he's acting, he or she's acting. They have a goal of what they want to achieve, and then they are a perfect rival for the hero.
Right.
Now, out of all those things that I just mentioned, what do we know about Heath Ledger's Joker?
He's the opposite. I mean, he says it in the film, and I was going to comment on that. He doesn't want to kill Batman. He needs Batman.
Yeah.
Just like Batman needs him. You know, so it's absolutely the perfect scenario.
What I'm getting at is we don't know his background.
Mm-hmm.
He tells everybody the same story, but he changes it every time.
He changes
time.
It every time.
I got these scars.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Right.
We don't know what his motivation is.
Other than he just wants to watch the world burn.
There you go.
Right
just
there.
Watch the world burn. And it literally burns a pile of money.
Yep.
Okay, so it's not money. It's not power. So we don't know his background. We don't really know what his motivation is. Other than to watch the world burn, and you know he needs Batman, right? This is why it fits into that post 9/11 type era. And mm-hmm. I've actually used this before, like in class when I decide to teach. And stop.
Shout out
on the
shout out.
Hey, Seventh Hour's Movie Club. I said that from day one. All right, don't judge me. So no, but we actually look at how you know aspects of the Dark Knight use these 9/11 themes, mm-hmm. like when he's pinging the cell phones of everyone just
yeah,
to
really.
Find the Joker, you know, the obvious
invasion of the privacy.
The obvious metaphor of that is mm-hmm. the Patriot Act. And, you know, how far would you go to catch somebody that is mm-hmm. the craziest person you've ever met? I mean, obviously, you know, the Heath Ledger's Joker is a terrorist is what I'm trying to get at, but a terrorist that has no real direction or goal of what he wants.
Fear wants to cause pain.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's the scariest part about him,
mm-hmm.
you know. Anyways,
he originally was cast, or Nolan actually approached him to play Batman in Batman Begins. They were good buddies, and he saw no, what did he say, no worth in doing a Super Bowl film. And he turned it down. And after seeing Batman Begins, he went back to Christopher Nolan and said, I really want to play the Joker. And they just kind of turn him loose with it.
Yeah.
That's what you get from it. I mean, the realness of the whole thing. And it's.
Isn't it funny about Batman Begins? Because I literally did not see that in the theater because I was done with Batman after Batman mm-hmm. and Robin. And then I saw it on home video at the
Batman
time.
Forever.
I was just blown away. One, because the Scarecrow was one of my favorite characters because of the psychology, psychology part of that and the fears. Yeah, in the Super Bowl.
And it was such a surprise to see Liam Neeson play anybody but a badass, but he was another badass in that film, right?
Yeah. He was like
that's
Oscar
pretty much typecast.
The opposite. what else? I mean, you guys have other.
Who are the students? Who are the students that are on?
Well, who's?
Mad.
I don't know who's.
He's salty.
Woody is mad.
I'm not mad. Woody, it's okay. We love you.
I chose Heath Ledger because. I just enjoyed how, I remember the first time I watched the movie in theaters, like, everything he did was a surprise, how unpredictable he was throughout the movie just kept you on edge, and it was exciting.
Yeah.
On cue, where's the flashcards?
I am back from the restroom, and
poor Woody.
Well, the most surprising part and the most funny, and I mean, what a, okay, so Cesar Romero, funny. Jack Nicholson, funny. Heath Ledger, terrifying and funny, especially with the pencil bit, dark, you know.
Humor. Super dark humor.
Super dark humor.
Make this pencil disappear.
Make this pencil disappear.
Ta-da! In the hospital and the thing won't work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just shaking it. All of that was ad-libbed.
That was, yeah.
I heard it actually didn't go off.
It didn't go off, and so he just started ad-libbing.
Cocking his head. And like.
Well, and I think one of the best lines is at the beginning with the pencil trick when he opens up his jacket. He's got the strings with the... with the grenade, doesn't somebody say something like, what do you think? You're just going to walk in here and you're going to, you know, just take over? Yeah. And he's like, yes. Yeah. You know, just...
matter of fact.
Yes. So just his deliverance was just, yeah.
Incredible.
So
I mean, he invested fully into it. That's...
Well, and, you know, kind of the whole point of this little podcast was, you know, trying something new in class and something kind of interesting as well. But we were talking about how do the Jokers reflect each society. Maybe at the time they were made, we talked about post 9/11, you know, just the fear that we live in with violence and terrorism, threat of terrorism, all that. 1989, I mean, the Joker isn't much different than, you know, the comic book Joker. Not that those things like terror and violence didn't, you know, exist then. But it's a much different, it's a comic book.
It showed
version.
The mob world and the social class,
yeah,
differences.
Exactly.
And how that kind of, the fear of a, what is supposed to be Gotham City, like a New York City, right?
Yeah.
How that kind of comes about.
And I don't know, like, going back to, not to totally ignore, like, Jared Leto. That Jared?
Yeah, Jared Leto.
Did I say that? Okay. Because his Joker isn't much, I mean, it is different than Heath Ledger's, but it's not bad either. I just don't know what direction. That film is 10 years old now.
I read that the other day. I saw an article on that.
Wow,
yeah.
10 years old. And so society hasn't changed much. So it's not like the incarnation of the Joker is much different.
He's still dark.
He's still dark.
The new movies and they're all dark.
I don't know about that laugh, though. Sounds like Dracula trying to... Count.
Vun.
Vun. Boo. So,
all right, how are things?
How about that? What's that?
Batman to Sesame Street.
Yeah,
in 2 seconds.
We get off cue real fast here. Brock, what were you gonna say?
Get in here, Brock. I don't have anything to say about the joke. Oh, come on.
Come
on. In the audience. It's not my
Brock.
Brock's one.
Brock. Brock's a Catwoman guy, but I don't blame you for that because it's Halle Berry. Or
idea what you're talking about.
Nope.
Well, there's what's her name too.
No, there's not. No, there's
okay.
not.
Okay. No. All right. Come on in, Watson. We have a special guest.
Oh, we have a guest appearance on the podcast. Come on in.
Just don't bring up that solo Catwoman movie.
Well, we just did.
Oh, good.
And it's horrible.
We have derailed.
Is this for me? Oh, perfect. Hey, this just in, folks. I got to sign here. Okay. I'm literally live signing. Documents and
great radio here.
It's live. All right, what else, guys? What else on the Jokers? What about what other?
Well, I don't think we mentioned something with Nick's Joker, but we might have. How you did say worthy adversary, but I mean, you kind of commented, of course, how it's the Dark Knight. Well, how did he become the Dark Knight? I mean,
yeah.
It took somebody like Joker's character in the, you know, 2008 version to make him realize, whoa, I got to go dark with this. And he took it upon himself and said, all right, I'm going to be the hero that this town needs but doesn't deserve, right? Or the villain, excuse me, right?
He
screwed up one of the most memorable quotes, obviously. Yeah.
No, he does. Yeah. He turns him into Batman. And in the comics, you can't have a Batman without a Joker. You're going to have the disappearance of the Joker. Yes. Okay, you're on our podcast.
Do you have any thoughts on the Joker? Do you have any thoughts on the Joker?
Sure.
We already interviewed Brock. We don't need another Brock.
Hey, this is a shout out to.
All right, thank you, Jenny.
This is a shout out to Mrs. Jenny Leighton, who listens to my podcast regularly. Miss Leighton, thank you so much for being a regular listener. Seriously.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, she is. She's a regular listener, and she's now on the podcast.
Being a good sport.
What was I saying? I was talking about...
Your kids weren't listening anyway.
Was I talking about Stormtroopers or was it Darth Vader?
I think I heard Luke Skywalker in here somewhere.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. That's why the Terminator's here to keep me back
on topic.
Yeah, so the idea is that the Joker cannot exist without Batman and vice versa. But I will say that there have been some... like going back to The Killing Joke, and I keep saying that. If you haven't seen... I think the new animated film came out recently. Mm-hmm. It's like the first rated R, you know, DC film... animated, but the comic book, what I'm talking about, is back in 1988, and there's an interesting ending to that comic book, which is very ambiguous, because we don't know if Batman actually kills the Joker or what happens in the end, but yeah, the Joker has died before, especially in The Dark Knight Returns, that comic book version of it. It's an older Joker that the Batman finally kills. And then, you know, not that Batman, like, goes away after that, but you're always going to have the Batman with the Joker. That's right. Why I think, rumor has it, I mean, Dark Knight ends in a very ambiguous way, too. The Joker's hanging there upside down.
We don't even know.
Chances are he would have been back in a second one. Although, what I've heard, you may have heard this too, Will, is that Nolan was done after The Dark Knight.
Right.
I mean, that was the end of Batman. And then, you know, they said, we need you to do a third one. That's why it seems kind of rushed, I think. And Bane, I don't know. You asked me earlier what I thought of Bane.
Yeah.
I don't know. He breaks Batman's back in the comics. They do it in the film. Basically, The Dark Knight Rises is just Rocky III. I mean, if you think about the plot...
I pity the fool.
You lose the first round, you go off, and you do some soul-searching and training, and all of a sudden you come back...
In the pit of despair.
Clubber Lang.
We're shorter.
Yeah. Hey, Clubber, take off your robe. So, yeah, exactly. A
couple montages.
All right, gotta have a montage. Yeah, Dakota.
Oh,
Dakota needs a mic.
No, I'm not sharing the mic, all right?
Can we get a mic? Can we get a mic?
Please. I don't know how the continuity of the Dark Knight and the new Batman series goes. Like, basically, in the Dark Knight, we see him become the Dark Knight. In the new Batman series, he's completely lost the whole morality of it. Like, his whole thing was, I don't kill people.
Right.
Well, he's gotten pushed and pushed and pushed, and even across all of the movies, even if they're not continuous, throughout time he gets more and more and closer to that edge in this final movie, like this final series that we're on now, he's been sort of pushed over the edge. He doesn't care anymore. He's like, I just got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I just have to do it to do it. I have to make the city good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He You're doesn't care what the repercussions are. Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So one thing I like to point up is in Batman versus Superman, there's an Easter egg with Robin's suit. And in Suicide Squad, there's also an Easter egg on Joker where the bullet holes are. And there's a theory saying that that's actually Robin. And in the comics, there actually is a section there where Robin actually does die, but another Robin does become the Joker. So it could be continuity on the fact that the Joker is dead, but this could be a whole new Batman or the same Batman, just older, hardened, who lost his apprentice to the Joker.
Yeah, and there's even a version of the comic book where Robin gets beaten to death by the Joker with a tire iron, and it's like very graphic and violent. And to most, some readers were, you know, they like that because they didn't really like the Robin character at the time. Well, you know, it's
second fiddle.
Yeah. Everyone go out and beat a 12-year-old boy with a tire iron. Okay, no, that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that sometimes the character had gotten a little annoying to other the readers. But, yeah, there's been different Robins as well, like how The Dark Knight Rises ends with that Robin is actually pretty cool. And supposedly they're going to make a Nightwing movie, which is about
based off
Dick
of
Grayson being, you know, Nightwing. So... yeah, so let's wrap this up, guys. You know, again, this was not, hopefully this wasn't like material to write your 5-page essay for comp. What this was just a friendly conversation about, you know, in other words, we're not scholars on the Joker or the Batman series is what I'm trying to get at. Or Super Bowls. Yeah. Or the Grammys. Why so serious? I'm going to record that tonight. I'm going to record my song.
Can I distance myself from this podcast?
And our final word's going to go to Anna. No?
Anna, come on.
Okay. Michael is going to lead us out, the Herminator. Anybody else, though, want to wrap this up?
I think Brock wanted to say
something. Oh, Brock.
Well, when anyone's interested, this is kind of off the topic of the Joker, but if you're interested in Fortnite, I have a Twitch stream. It's called Be Regular. I usually stream every now and then. It's free. Come watch and subscribe.
I think I understood about three of those words.
That's how Twitch app.
Poor Brock. I got to tell you, he's one of the nicest kids in this entire school. And we give him, including myself, the grown adult, a hard time. But anyways, we love you, Brock. Okay, Michael.
Love you, Brock. Love you.
Michael, what were you going to say? We're going to wrap this up.
So I don't think it's a debate that we all think the Heath Ledger Batman's the best one that's probably happened. We also can't deny that Jack Nicholson's Batman started a revelation. But we also can't take out Romero's that kind of started that whole, you know, slapstick comedy that's always been there, as well as the serious dark humor. And it's something that all three Jokers are similar, but in their own way unique. And it's something that we said earlier is, well, unique to each generation.
Yeah, and because the Joker always has the humor, that's why he's called the Joker. Whether it's little buzzer, hand buzzer things, or sticking a pencil, in someone's eyeball, making it disappear. It's all your level of humor of what you find funny. Yeah, ta-da. All right, so on that note, I'd like to thank our guest today, Mr. Madeline, representing Heath Ledger's Joker, Mr. Will Meyer, representing the Jack Nicholson Joker, myself and the Herminator, representing the Cesar Romero Joker, and our studio audience. Can we get one last round of applause for our studio audience? And last but not least, I do want to send a shout out to Dakota and Nick for really carrying Will through this whole thing. And Dakota for at least saying the one smart thing in this whole episode.
Instant credibility.
This is fun. This is probably our shortest one, but I hope you enjoyed it. And hey, we're going to do this again. We'll come up with another topic. We're going to let Brock pick it and write it. And
thanks, guys.
And we are out of here. Din, 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 din.